animals less healthy than you can't nourish you.
Are you surviving or are you thriving?
Are you too busy to live?
Do you have grain brain?
Fat was brain.
Fight for your life. Get your prescription for health today.
Is Mother Nature too good to be
true?
It's
not you, it's the food. It's a no-grainer.
Oh. That isn't happening to us.
It's already happening to you, woman. Join our army of Minas.
Keep the government off our farms.
Make it happen today.
Save the bacon.
Save the bacon.
It's time to drop some atomic mom bombs.
It's not me. It's you. Invest in your life.
Yay! Her name is Neethi.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Neethi the pharmacist, and I'm here with Mr. Mark Bedingfield of Fat Radish Farm. Hey, Mark.
Hello.
So, Mark Bedingfield, affectionately known as Uncle Mark on the farm, is just a wealth of knowledge. We can talk for years and not get through any conversation, I think, right? Today, we were trying to figure out what we wanted to talk about. I think that everybody, like all the listeners, would really be fascinated to hear what you have to say regarding the centralization of agricultural production. So for all the listeners, in all of our podcast episodes, we're working to educate the consumer so that they can be more regenerative. Or we're always sharing with them, you know, what is it like to be a regenerative farmer so that they know how to seek out the food and know how to be better regenerative customers by hearing from the farmers what the obstacles are. I don't know where to start with this.
Well, you can start, I guess, with why it's so difficult to find nutrient-dense food now. And part of it is economic. But the reason in nutrient-dense food, organic food, a lot of people want to call it, but is more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it more expensive? Because the cost of that food is measured just in what the item costs in the grocery store as compared to what comes from the industrial food industry. But the industrial food industry does not account for all the cost, which is health, because this food is not only is it not as nutritious in some cases, and in most cases, it's bad for you.
It's poison. I call it poison.
It's poison.
It's either food or it's poison.
Right. And so the regenerative food that comes from regenerative agriculture is, of course, more expensive, but it accounts for all the cost. And you pay for it when you purchase the item.
Because no hidden cost.
There's no hidden cost.
That's a great thing we have to talk about because, we haven't said that with the food is that, hey, this is the food with no hidden cost. They do that with cell phones and whatever. We need to start saying that.
Yeah, there's no hidden cost. I mean, the chicken from our farm is $6 a pound, but we are actually aiding and abetting the environment. We are creating soil with all 90 essential minerals and vitamins that are in it. And, we're not leaching, destroying our soil base, which is the biggest investment, the best investment you can have in a civilization is the soil bank.
So that's making it sustainable, right?
What we are
right?
doing is we are, as a civilization, deficit spending our soil bank. And pretty soon it's going to go belly up. So what is the cost? So a chicken, and you buy a chicken on Fat Radish Farm, you're going to pay $6 a pound. It's a four-pound chicken. That's $24. You can go down to another grocery chain and buy that same, you think it's the same chicken, it's a 4-pound chicken, and maybe it's $5.
$1.99 a pound.
Okay, $1.99 a pound.
And currently
that is not the full cost.
Right.
To calculate the full cost, I would suggest that's a $100 chicken.
Yes.
Or even more.
Right.
Because if you look, they feed these chickens arsenic. And even the ones that are organic, it's not done in sustainable regenerative methods.
Because so, it's inside a house, right?
It's inside a house, and they can call it free range because they open a door and there's 3 square feet of area for the chicken to go in. But it's a hoax. It's like everything else. The organic movement took off, and so corporate America hijacked it.
Tell us what you really think about organic.
Organic is a hoax. And it's been hijacked by the corporations. And the corporations, can skew it. They like it because people think, organic, it means it's good. It means it's clean. It does not mean it's good. It does not mean it's clean.
You know what I've been saying, Uncle Mark, is that people should not worry about the confusing labels. Just know your farmer. Like, why does it have to be so complicated? Just know your farmer.
It doesn't have to be. And there is a movement now. And if people, they have to learn that, we've been spoiled into convenience. Mm-hmm. You go to a grocery store and everything you want in that grocery store is there. Okay. So you buy it and it's convenient. And if you go out and you want to go to the local farms, to buy your stuff, it's not as convenient. You have to drive out there. But if I told you that when you were shopping in the grocery store, you were buying the equivalent of ant poison, would you buy it? Would you go around and eat this stuff if you knew it was making you sick?
I mean, some people look at, what I say for a comparison to is that, how you go camping and you set camp. Now you and your children are walking around checking out the woods or whatever, and you say, let's go pick some berries. And then you got some berry bushes very close by, but those are the poisonous berries. And the good berries are not so close by, maybe not as conveniently located, maybe overhanging over some water or something even. Like, they're difficult to get to. But so are you going to tell your kids, hey, these are convenient. Let's just eat these. Mm. Or are you going to keep going? But they will do that and make that choice every single time and say, well, my kids don't even want to go, over there. Or they don't even want to try the other good berries. These ones are right here. Isn't that the same thing as them saying to me, my kids only eat chicken nuggets. They won't eat chicken off the farm. That's what they say. My kids won't eat chicken off the farm. They think they're grossed out by the bones. Or whatever, and they only want to eat nuggets. And I'm thinking to myself, and you're letting them. That's the problem. The problem is you're not letting them. I mean, I tell my kids that's poison. You can't eat that.
Well, it's a matter of education. They've brainwashed everybody to believe that that this is the most efficient way to do it, and decentralized production is the cleanest and least harmful to the environment. And it's the exact opposite. It's like Orwell's 84: up is down and down is up. And they tell you that you can't feed 7 billion people.
They've scared everybody with that.
With the regenerative agriculture methods, which is not true, because it just means that more people would be involved in the agriculture business, like it used to be in the turn of the 20th century in the United States. 90% of the population derived their livelihood from agriculture. Or agriculture-related industries, and what happened was, is the corporations, once they could get a charter, a lot of people didn't realize that when this country was founded, it was against the law to have a corporation. The only way you could get a corporate charter is if it was for the public good. It had the beginning, like to build a railroad. It had the beginning and it had an end. Mm-hmm. And that all changed, so once you could, these corporations, they want to consolidate markets. And the only way you can consolidate markets is you have to start, denigrating the food and also the farmland. And you have to go into what's called monoculture, mm-hmm. which is not natural. monoculture is not, it's not, it doesn't work with nature.
And nature is diverse.
Yes. And so then they, and so they use, you know, methods that are not sustainable. And I suggest, it's not just my suggestion, it's a known fact. Mm-hmm. That agriculture is collapsing all over the world.
You mean industrial agriculture?
Industrial agriculture is collapsing all over the world. And they've got a lot of people that are moving, a small but vocal minority of people that are really interested in getting into regenerative farming. But it's going to take, you know, the more people are going to need to support this in order for it to work. And you know, the alternative is going to be, it's been making us sick for years, but and not only is it making us sick, it's not sustainable. It will collapse. It is collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the, I've told you about what's happened in the Florida citrus industry.
Right.
And it's collapsing. The soils are completely
raped, basically.
Just leached out, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, even on our farm, you can see, because it was a tobacco farm, and it was the soil, you know, where we're not farming is just sterile. It won't even hardly grow weeds. So if you grow something to eat off a soil like that, there's nothing in it.
I know.
So,
and so, you know, people are feeling hopeless, I think, when they're hearing some of that, not just from you, but, you know, that's what they're hearing from biotech. And they're being told that there's no nutrition in the food, so you have to buy supplements, and you have to, you know, like, it's insane to me the amount of money that people will pay for powdered bone broth versus just buying your chicken and making some broth. And they can't even understand all the pieces that are missing. I mean, just the high heat alone to turn it into powder.
What people are becoming aware of the fact that, you know, your gut flora is, you know, one of the main things in your health is your second brain or whatever, you know, and it's important for immune health.
Right.
And if you're getting vitamins, I call them dead vitamins.
Right.
And
there's no enzymes or anything.
What really makes this stuff work is the synergy between the bacteria. It's live. It's like when you go on our farm now, and I've done this, you can dig where we've had the animals and where we're doing all this regenerative farming, and the soil is alive.
Mm-hmm.
You can look under, you know, a microscope, and you can see all kinds of little bugs and stuff moving in there, you know, tiny little things. And you can go to where we haven't been doing that, and there's just nothing. It's like a desert. Mm-hmm. So
you can't just pour some supplements in there.
That's what they've been doing. They've been taking nitrogen, potassium, and phosphate, the three major elements. Those are the major elements,
mm-hmm.
and throw it on the ground and put a crop there, and it'll grow and it'll produce something, but there's nothing in the food.
Right.
And then it'll do that for a period of time, and then it'll even quit doing that.
But you guys, like, use amendments, but then you go further.
Well, we use amendments, but even organic farm. But see, my contention is, and this is my personal feeling, that organic farming is not even sustainable, because you have to go mine these amendments from somewhere.
Yeah.
And bring them to the farm. And regenerative agriculture, you have to have animals. And you use the animals.
I want everyone to understand, you're talking about the power of regenerative agriculture over organic, everybody. Are you listening? I want you to pay attention to that piece, because you can get organic food in the store, which you've heard me time and time again talk about all the pieces about how it's broken. You know, even when we had a conversation with Hayes, you know, we were discussing how you have organic lettuces that are bleached, triple bleached. And so they don't have to discuss processes, only ingredients, when they talk about organic. And so no one's paying attention to the process of amending the soil.
What you're doing is you're creating a living soil that's aerated, that's not compacted, that drains well,
That animals aerate better than machines, right?
And the animals, you know, you have all the essential vitamins and minerals that are in, you know, the excretia of the animal is going back in the soil, mm-hmm. and the bacteria and everything, and it just, so you are able to you close the loop. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go out and dig up a swamp somewhere and get some kind of organic matter to come mm-hmm. mix on the soil. Your soil becomes living and sustainable.
So to create this life, I mean, you've had years of experience. You're third generation farming. So you've had a lot of people to get, you know, information from in the past. But you were just saying... that you're creating this living soil, not just amending it, not just supplementing it.
No, it's a, mm-hmm. it's a living soil, and you have to have animals. You can't do it without animals.
So Hayes and I had this funny conversation where he was just going, I just have a question. You know, all these vegans, like, what sacrifice are they willing to make, like, you know, to nourish themselves? On what level? What does, is it a cell? Is it a molecule? You know, and then, you know, what do they propose we do with all this livestock? Like, what's their purpose? What's, so they just want to annihilate?
I don't know. Yeah,
all this other livestock.
I even have some friends who are vegans, and the way I kind of talk to my approach to my friends who are vegans, I say, look, I understand you don't want to eat animal products, but you must accept the fact that without animals, you can't have the nutritious stuff you need that you want. So
the plants, yeah.
Yeah, you have to have animals. So don't denigrate someone who does.
Help animals. You out with that.
Yeah.
And everybody functions differently and benefits differently. So we're never promoting any type of lifestyle.
I'm not promoting a lot. All I'm doing at this point in time is and over the years I've evolved. Mm-hmm. And one of the big changes for me was when I visited Masada, because I thought I was on the very tip of the technology with agriculture. With this drip irrigation, I mean, I had a company in Florida. I did it with the citrus industry. Mm-hmm. I had people working for me from Israel, from the Department of Agriculture in Israel, which has a highly advanced agriculture department in Israel. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was on the cutting edge of technology. And actually,
these pigeons were more cutting edge.
I've come full circle, and I know that the best way to do this and the most sustainable way to do it is the way they did it. And this is not new, what we're doing.
Right.
Is the way they did it 200 years ago or 100 years ago.
Or for eons before that.
Before that. I mean, this, you know,
people were eating before that.
All we've done is messed everything up, you know. And actually, if you are, you know, like and I've even had people say that, you know, this regenerative agriculture is not good for the environment. And actually, it's just the opposite.
Well, I mean, Alan Savory's proving that, isn't he? I mean, there's a lot of people that are, he's not the only one. I mean, there's many people. I mean, I think people, if they look up regenerative agriculture, they look up folks like Alan Savory. Do you have other folks that you could also refer?
Oh, I mean, you know, I think that there's just, I mean, you can go back and look at the, you can look, if you look historically, you mm-hmm. know, you go from agrarian society to what they call an industrial society. Mm-hmm. And it is true that you can't feed 7 billion people with only 1% of the population farming. And you can't do it.
Yeah.
So what it means is if you want to sustain a population of and I hate to sound callous about this, but I can tell you, when agriculture collapses, this commercial agriculture, mm-hmm. if we don't do that, then you have built up an artificial population mm-hmm. based on an unsustainable system.
And the bees are going to be affected, and the pollinators are going to be gone.
And mm-hmm. so when this system collapses, then you're going to have a massive die-off of the population.
Isn't it true? I don't know where I've read it because I read so many different things, but that once the bees are gone, I think they Einstein give us like seven. That. Yeah, so what? Once the bees are gone, what do we get? 7 years? Something like that?
You know, I'm already worried that we're I'm not worried about it, but I can see the mm-hmm. collapse. When I was in Florida doing citrus 20 years ago, the bee colonies were already in collapse.
Well, these past seven years have been crisis.
That's what a lot of people don't understand. That's also my first introduction to the GMOs was 20 years ago. And so they always are trying to fix a problem that was caused by technology with more technology.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and people they like to think that technology is the answer to everything, you know, but...
Well, they want scientific proof, Mark.
The bees have been... what's killing the bees is all the pesticides
mm-hmm.
and the GMOs and all the stuff.
Poison.
And what happened was they were collapsing 20 years ago from the pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the advent of the GMOs, and now that they're out, it's accelerated the process. So, yeah, I mean, what's going to happen is the bees are gone. You can't pollinate. And then the soil is collapsing. And they keep, you know, changing the basic cell structure of all these plants, and they can't regenerate themselves. And you've got companies like Monsanto that have patents on the seeds now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only way you have to go back to them to buy. Everything has gotten centralized. So what?
Going back to the topic,
everything gets centralized, and so the more centralized any system is, whether mm-hmm. it's agriculture or whatever the system is, the more centralized it is, the more volatile it is.
Yeah.
So that one little thing can happen down in the chain.
Because man isn't the knower of all things, right?
No. It creates a daisy chain of events, so that what happens over here that, you know, it daisy chains and it just causes the whole system to collapse. Whereas if you've got local farms, and like, for example, if you had a city the size of Raleigh here, and you had maybe it would take 1,000 small farms to feed this population in Raleigh. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Throwing some numbers out there.
Instead of, you know, and then so.
Well, I think that if you have like
catastrophe happen to 1,000 farms at the same time or somewhere in that chain is
not
remote.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's the security is to go back. That's what we're always telling everyone.
And not only that, the other thing that's important too in centralization, for particularly for products like orange juice, which I'm familiar with, and dairy,
mm-hmm.
You know, if they pasteurize it, and once you pasteurize, and I mean, I would argue with any nutritionist on this.
Mm-hmm.
Once you pasteurize orange juice or milk, you might as well just not even drink it.
No, because you've changed the chemistry of it, for one thing.
It's not living. It's like, it's dead. It's like,
don't you think it's funny that people are encouraged to have yogurt, for example. So I think it's hilarious. It's going back to your soil, analogy, where they kill the milk, they make the yogurt, and then they put four strains of bacteria that they think are the good ones in instead of the 60 or however many that was in there before.
Yeah.
And how do you know those are the four that were the good ones? And where do you come up with that? And, you know.
You don't. And the only way you can get really good quality milk is to buy it local because, you know, you're not. They've consolidated the dairy industry and they've convinced everybody it's not safe to drink, raw milk, which is just outlandish. You know, I was raised, my father was a cattle rancher
mm-hmm.
and primary of beef cattle.
Mm-hmm.
It was all grass-fed beef. There were chickens out there, so we had chickens from the farm. We had eggs from the farm. We had a milk cow. The milk was all raw. And believe me, if the milk goes bad, you're not going to be drinking bad milk.
No.
You'll know it.
Nature screams at you, you know, do not eat me. If anything.
The same with orange juice.
Right.
The same. So, you know, and we, I never got, you know, sick from drinking or eating any of this stuff. It's about as healthy as a horse. What they're telling you is, hey, we can't dominate the market. If we can't centralize it, then we got to make it, have it get a longer shelf life on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to cook it.
But more than that, though, I think is that they not only want you to buy that imitation poison. Well, it's poison, not food. They want you to buy the poison so that you have to buy the supplements so that you can try to stay alive a little bit longer or whatever and do all the good things like the working out or whatever. And then when you start falling apart, then you go like, you know, to the medical realm and now you have to pay for more serious damage and you have to suffer needlessly, you know. Because no one needs to have to go through all that suffering. And then finally, they're, you know, wait until you have no cash at all. And
well, that's the idea. A lot of people have a hard time with that. That's the idea. The idea is to make you chronically sick. Mm-hmm. And then they send you from the agricultural industrial complex to the medical industrial complex.
Well, Uncle Mark, don't you think that's efficient? It's efficient business.
It's very efficient if you're. It's very efficient if you don't mind making people sick and killing them to make a buck.
I think you farmers are just a little bit too. You know, what do they call us? I mean, I'm not even a farmer, but I'm just an agrarian eater. But they say to me that I'm very idealistic.
I don't think it's idealistic. I mean, you know, this is not. This is a matter of survival. And, you know, and people think that, you know, mm-hmm. societies rise and fall in a cyclical fashion and not in linear. It's not, we don't progress linearly. You know, people think it's a straight line. We are collapsing as a society. And people don't, even people who don't understand agriculture or anything about any of that,
mm-hmm.
know something's not right.
I mean, I do think that they, well, that's why they're always seeking something good, right?
Yeah, and they're coming, you know, you see people that go to the farmers markets and they, you know, and you say, okay, and I've asked them, why do you come here? Well, it's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But see, just because something's fresh, it can be poison too.
They don't know what to say. That's the problem.
But they know that.
They know that something's going on and they need to do something. People say to me all the time, they're like, well, where are we supposed to find the farms? I mean, they don't want to just join my CSA because they feel like, why should we put all of our eggs in that basket? You know, which makes sense. I don't want them to just 100% rely on me to get their, you know, food. And I've said to the people, you know, stay nourished or whatever. And people get offended by that when I say that because they think that I'm insinuating that if they don't join my CSA, that they're not doing a good job being nourished, like it's some kind of dig. And I'm not saying that, you know, I want people to have this independence. Isn't that what we're fighting for right now?
Well,
food freedom.
Here's what I tell people. I'm not, they act like I'm trying to sell them something. You know, I don't care whether they buy it or not because I run out of stuff every year.
They can't believe that we're going to be upset if they don't join our mission.
It's like you're trying to sell something. That's why you talk bad about, you know, no. I have been in agriculture my entire life, and I've been around it. My family has. I was raised on a cattle. I remember the story, you know, and I love history, so I looked in the history of stuff. Like, where does this stuff come from?
Right.
You know, and like, I'll never forget when I was young, probably 12 years old or something, 13 years old, you know,
mm-hmm.
I had a friend and I went to his house and we used to cook French fries. We loved French fries when we were kids. And he cooked some French fries in Crisco.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they,
you probably didn't even know what that was.
Well, I thought they were really good. You know, they were like crispy and clean, you know, they weren't kind of soggy like when my mother did it because she used lard.
Yeah.
And, and I thought, these are really good. And I went back to my mother and I said, why don't you get some Crisco? Because these French fries are really, she said, that is not food.
Mm.
That she just knew instinctively that was not food. And, you know, I found out later the history of Crisco. It was developed in World War II to grease, to use as a lubricant in the tanks and stuff in World War II. And after the war was over, they said, what are we going to do with this Crisco?
After the war, they had a lot of stuff to try to get rid of, right?
It was an artificial lubricant. And they said, what are we going to do with this stuff? I know, we'll name it Crisco and we'll feed it to people.
That's wonderful.
And that's the trans fat that clogs your arteries up. You'll never get...
What people are not aware of is the most dangerous poison you can put in your body are these broken, toxic fats. And the reason is because they are the building blocks for your cells. And so when you're considering fat or protein or amino acids like the broths, you have to have the highest quality food version of it and not the poison version of it, because that is what's happening right now. Is food is, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, but my mother's layman's term for these things is that food is a hormone delivery system and exercise is a hormone management system.
Yeah.
And if you are not demanding the highest quality building blocks for your input, then your cells are going to mutate, which is the cancer, which is the allergies, which is the inflammation and all of these million problems. Like, you know, the food. A child yesterday, we were at a school speaking and one of the kids came to me and said, you know, I have a lot of food allergies. So what you were saying about the inflammation thing, he figured that out in moments. And this is a child who, you know, I know like he's on Goldfish and, you know, whatever other toxic inputs. And he was really worried about that because he said, you know, I have a problem. And you said something about allergies. And I said, yeah. And so I was explaining to him, you know, like how the intestines work and if they're inflamed, how that violates your sacred bloodstream. Well, that's one part of it. But, you know, fat and protein and, you know, all of these things are building blocks for your cells. And if you're putting in Crisco that your body cannot understand like what it is to use it correctly, and you trick your body into using that to build cells, then, you know, now you're damaged on a cellular level. It's not like sugar. At that point, sugar's better because sugar at least comes in as energy and gets out, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't part of building anything and staying in your body.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like I said, I like the history of things, you know, so I went back and I've had people say things to me like, well, our life expectancy is up from when it was back in the quote unquote good old days, back when our country was founded, whatever. And I said, well, let's dig into that. Let's bore down into like life expectancies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you look at something like John Adams, for example, second president, was 90 years old when he died.
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson was 82. And this is in an age when they had no insurance.
No health care. You were responsible for your own.
And look at the state of the medical practices then. You know? So, but what they did have that was made the life expectancy averages go down. There was a lot of women that died in childbirth because that's a kind of a sketchy thing, you know, having babies. I don't know about that, but you would.
Yeah.
That, you know, things can go wrong. And so that those advancements made sure that more of the babies survived and flu epidemics that killed off a lot. But once you got through all that, those things, those people lived for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, Benjamin Franklin, all these, they lived for a long time. And I can tell you, you can draw a real, if you're a critical thinker, a correlated, it had to do with their diet.
Eskimos.
Yeah.
I talk about the Eskimos. They average, you know, 100 to 150 years old. No plants. Well, maybe some algae or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Seaweed. But the majority of it is blubber.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, fat is not, I mean, that's the biggest thing. I will tell you that I'm 100% convinced that Alzheimer's is a physician-induced illness.
Yeah.
Primarily caused by
heavy metals.
Primarily caused by vaccines, mm-hmm. and this obsession with cholesterol.
Yeah.
And they want to give these anti-cholesterol drugs to people, but they say your cholesterol is too high. And your brain is made out of what?
Cholesterol.
So mm-hmm. it short circuits your brain. I'm convinced.
Then they end up on the anti-depression medication.
I'm convinced that it is, you mm-hmm. know, and I have, you know, I just am convinced. And
I agree with you on those.
You know, your diet, you know, what is, so that's the problem. We've got people that think, okay, the food is so expensive. That's an obstacle mm-hmm. that it costs too much. But then if you say, okay, if I eat properly, and I'll just use myself as an example, and I'm not perfect, but I will say I'm 66 years old and I haven't been to a doctor in 30 years. Okay, I don't get colds, I don't get sick, and people say, boy, you're really playing with fire. Well, maybe if I die tomorrow, so what? I'm 66 years old. The last 30 years, I haven't gone to a doctor. Mm-hmm. I mean, not for a physical, for nothing. And I know people that are...
Are you suffering?
I'm not suffering. I feel good. I've got some back issues that I had from traumatic injury when I was young, but younger, falling off of horses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But as far as my...
Because you were living.
Yeah, I was living. But I feel good. I don't get colds. Everybody, you know, and I think I'm convinced that 90% of it is because of diet. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that people in a proper diet, what is a proper diet? I mean...
Plants and animals, right?
You can't eat a proper diet shopping in a grocery store. I'm just mm-hmm. telling you, it's not possible.
I mean, plants and animals. Yeah. It's just plants and animals. But the plants just can't be doused with poison.
They need to be clean.
Mm-hmm. And the animal, I mean, we had this conversation with the kids yesterday. I said to them, I said, if you're eating some vegetables or fruit or whatever, and you drop it on the floor, are you going to eat it again? Or is it too dirty? I mean, what? And they all said they were going to throw it away. All of them. But then I said to them, okay, let's suppose that you're at a gas station and you're out there on the pad where people are pumping gas and you drop it there. Now what? Oh, they were definitely going to throw it away. I was like, well, then why do you think it's okay to pour gasoline all over an entire crop and eat that?
Well... another reason I know I feel strong about this and the centralization part of it was when I was in the citrus business, I thought I had discovered this miracle because, you know, spraying orange groves for these little mites, they get these little things called rust mites, and it discolors the fruit, and so it doesn't look pretty and people don't want to buy it, which is another
problem. I know.
Problem we have. And so
I the lies.
and you'd buy this these chemicals and have a big skull and crossbones on it. And, mm. you know, and I'm out there thinking, and this is before all the regulations. I mean, out there spraying with no mask, nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, and killing yourself.
You're thinking, you know, this can't be good, you know, for you. Right. And so I just in an amateur churish sort of way, said, okay, what makes a rust mite live? And you look at it under, and they breathe through their skin. And I thought, well, maybe I can spray them with soap and suffocate them.
Mm-hmm.
And soap, you know, just dish soap. So I did, and it worked. It just took them longer to die.
Right.
But it worked, and the fruit was clean. And so I went to the agricultural experiment station and I told
them your discovery.
I said, look, I discovered this. And they kind of smirked at me, you know, and I said, why aren't we doing, you ought to do a study on this and put it out and it saved the industry billions of dollars, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not harmful to the environment and, you know, it's not killing the bees, it's not, and.
He said that's petrochemical.
And
so.
Then he pointed to a spectrometer over there in the lab. He said, what do you think that thing over there costs? And I said, I have no idea. And he said, oh, I forgot what it was, a lot of money. And he said, are you going to give that to us? You know, are you going to donate that to us? You know, and I'm not going to name the chemical company because I had a run-in with them down there already.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was young then and what do you call idealistic.
And, like me.
And I was told I needed to shut up or those people would. And I mean, they weren't kidding. So, you know, it's all about, all you have to do is follow the money.
Yeah.
So they make money selling these chemicals, and that's what, you know, historically it goes back to the Rockefellers. John D. Rockefeller was a snake oil salesman, and he was looking for a place to sell petroleum byproducts.
Mm-hmm. Garbage.
And garbage, and so mm-hmm. a good place to sell that would be to spray on...
to farmers.
So you could do... Mm-hmm. Now we can do monoculture farming and feed the world because we got something we can spray on there to kill the pests
mm-hmm.
that control themselves. If you're in a regenerative situation and you have biological control, natural control,
mm-hmm.
and that's the whole premise behind industrialized agriculture. It had nothing to do with feeding the world. It had to do with making the Rockefellers rich.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they sold their petroleum byproducts. And that's just that's a historical fact. You can look it up. That's how that happened.
Well, I hope everybody learned a lot today. I think that we can keep talking for hours and days. For those of you who don't know, Uncle Mark is like super historian. He can go on and on various topics. And I really appreciate your time, you know, to come here and talk with me today and to share this concept of centralization, because I feel like, you know, this cost issue and convenience issue is a constant obstacle. And, you know, at some point, you know, I finally just said, look, you either want to live or you want to die. You either want to suffer or you don't want to suffer. And I just don't care. And I don't get anything out of it one way or the other. I'm trying to let you know what's going on. We're providing, you know, a service. And if you want to participate, then great. And if you don't, that's okay. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, what have you got to lose? Try it and listen, you know, and if you don't need to, if all of a sudden you find yourself healthy and you don't need your medication.
Right.
You know, I've never taken a pharmaceutical drug in my life.
Well, I promote like a self experiment. I tell them, I'm like, don't listen and believe anything I'm saying.
No.
Just do your own little experiment. Yeah, if you
feel better and yeah. you know you don't need to go to buy all these medications and how much is it costing you?
Mm-hmm.
You spend it here, but you save it there, and plus you feel good.
Right. And you know, we've been able to go holistic with all of our medical care. We have a little bit of emergent insurance. But like in the event you get into a car accident, you know, allopathic medicine is good for sewing you back up and yeah. putting your bones back together. But outside of that, internal medicine,
no,
they're not. That's where holistic medicine is very important. And before the Rockefellers, everyone had.
And even John D. Rockefeller had a holistic physician even after, because mm-hmm. he knew.
I mean, any of these big power people eat organic or whatever better.
The Chinese,
they all have their own.
They all have their own organic farms, especially for the Communist Party. They all know.
Yeah, they know what's going on. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody, even anyone who is listening right now, has an instinct. And I tell everybody, I'm like, don't listen to me. Don't believe what I say. I mean, use your gut.
The great thing now is there's all kinds of resources and people to go to on the internet now. You can go
mm-hmm.
and you get and make up your own mind.
Have some guts. Get up and use your guts.
Just use it. Go on the internet and you can find all kinds of alternative ideas about it. I mean, that's what I did once I started questioning. That's where I came from. And I thought, you know, this can't be sustainable, and I was involved in it. That's why I got involved with the Israelis and the drill.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and it's not sustainable. So,
well,
look it up. It's all out there on the internet.
Thank you so much for sharing all that. And, you know, I hope this episode really serves a lot of the listeners. And I appreciate so much the fact that you are still working so hard to help and nourish the community. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Leave an honest review about the show on iTunes and like and share our Facebook page. You can also sign up for our newsletter. And if you like the education that we're bringing to you each week, can you please help support our 501c3 mission to reestablish the regenerative organic small family farm food system by making it happen today with a tax-deductible cash donation? You can register and make a donation at www.farm2forkmeatriot.org. Again, that's www.farmtoforkmeatriot.org. And click on the donate button. I'm Neethi, signing off. Remember, let your farmer fill your prescription. Reboot, restore, and rejoice.